Better Golf Podcast, powered by Wynn Daily Sports, where bettors go to bet better. Here are your hosts, Tee Off Sports and Sticks Picks.
Welcome, welcome, welcome to the Better Golf Podcast. We are back with me, as always, Spencer Aguiar at Tee Off Sports. Spencer, how are we doing on this fine Tuesday afternoon? I guess it's still pretty early.
I'm doing well. It's an exciting week for us here. You know, we'll have the PGA Championship in a week, but you know, it's always nice to have these tournaments. We get a new course this week, so we'll dive into that. But how are you doing?
I can't complain. The Wells Fargo was kind of rough on me. I only had a few tickets that I could take to the window. 18 was pretty wild just to see how tough that hole played, depending on the pin placement. It's hilarious that Bryson DeChambeau, would he take like an 8 on that hole and just flew home to Dallas? And then he ends up making the cut. So that's pretty funny. I'm sure you guys all heard that story. But overall, let me see. Like, good for me, I guess, was all of my interest in Tommy Fleetwood. I think he was plus money to finish top 40. Yeah, he was plus 120 on points bet. And then I also had him winner of Group E on points bet, something I don't often bet, but I love Tommy, and he was plus 275 in that group. So that kind of saved me a little bit. And then the only other ticket I think I had was Aaron Wise. Any exposure I had to Aaron Wise, he finished top 9. So he's starting to find form. I'm going to have some interest in him again this week. But man, everything else, I did not get in outright. I looked at Rory. We didn't really talk about him a whole lot last week. I'd rather sit and wait and kind of see him find his game. I know he owns that course, but he dominated late. It was really cool to see him take that drop on 18 and just throw an absolute dart. He blinders were on. He was going nowhere but first place. So it was good to see him back. He's great for the game of golf. But other than that, I kind of took a bath. Joseph Bramlett, our 5-1 top 40, blew it on day 2. So that was frustrating. If I just had that ticket, it would have been a great week for me, and it didn't really matter what else happened. But how about you? It kind of ate me up a little bit.
Yeah, that was a good call on your part on Fleetwood. You know, I had all the fades of him, which I did not hit any of those. But it was, you know, it was a weird week. Like, I almost immediately was down 7-8 units before this thing really had started. By the time we hit Friday, anything that had been decided for me was a loss. So it was a scramble to try to get back to even. And, you know, all things considered, I was relatively happy with the way it turned out. I had a losing week, but I was kind of anticipating it being one of the worst weeks of the season. It ended up being about a unit of a loss. I had 23 units in play. I mean, that's as large as you will see from me on a given week. So there was a lot going on for me. For the outrights, Reed and Bubba gave me respectable finishes. Wasn't on Rory, as we discussed with that, but you know, the head-to-heads were okay. The Connors and Fleetwood's fades, I went 1-4 on those. Those were pretty much as bad as you could get, but everything else kind of came in around them. And then the in-tournament plays were kind of just where I made back a lot of my ground there. I had 2 plus 145 hits Thursday on Friday with Woodland over Connors. Those salvaged it a little bit. And then, you know, on the top 40 market, I got a plus 180 payout on Gooch and then a partial on Rogers at plus 360. So those two things salvaged it a little bit for me. But yeah, I mean, all in all, not the best week I've ever had, but I was happy to escape with it not being as bad as it could have been.
Yeah, great call on Patrick Rogers. That was a nice hit there. I did have that one as well, but I played way too small, of course. But let's get into it. The Byron Nelson, the AT&T Championship, I guess, at TPC Craig Ranch. I believe that is in McKinney, Texas, playing about 7,500 yards. I do not think we have any course history on this at all. It's a new course for the PGA. What do we got here? 156 golfers, so the top 65 and ties will make the cut. So no previous winners at all, but what are your thoughts on this course? What kind of metrics are you looking for? I know we talked offline. It seems like we both weighted it around other TPC courses. So the fairways should be pretty wide, not a lot of trouble to get into off the tee, but tons of bunkers, going to be some par five scoring that's going to be really important, and then approach tee to green. That's pretty much all I weighted. So what about you?
Yeah, it's the first time, as you said, we've seen this venue in action on the PGA Tour, but the course looks rather basic. Players will have to deal with a plethora of bunkers littered throughout and a creek that meanders within the property. But it seems like an extremely simple layout in general. There's going to be birdie opportunities. I would say Texas gusts will probably be the property's best defense. But you have large, wide open fairways, large greens that reside on almost every hole. Distance is going to play a factor to an extent just because of the open land. But, you know, your long irons will come into play too with for that reason, just because of the length, the sheer length that you have of the property. But I pretty much weighted this pretty simply for what I was trying to look for. You know, I've done some minor tweaks to my personal model since releasing my spreadsheet for public consumption, but I put 15% on strokes gained off the tee. As I said, fairways are open to be attacked, which is why I also added 10% to distance for an overall aggregate of a quarter of my statistical preference there. I did 20% on proximity from over 175 yards. It's the only iron stat I use, but it does appear like most second shots will come from deep. I have 10% on stand safe percentage. As you mentioned, tons of bunkers that are going to be spread throughout this property. And then I have 12.5% each on par five birdie or better and overall birdie or better percentage. I usually don't weigh that much for individual scoring chances, but this looks like a very simple course where it's going to be a putting contest, and these putting contests can sometimes be difficult, but I wanted to put a quarter of my weight onto that. And then the last 20% just was equally divided between strokes gained total on win and strokes gained total on bent grass. I think the strokes gained total from the stats should highlight good golfers that excel on this sort of a track. And I mean, anytime you look at strokes gained totals in general, you're usually getting some of the better golfers. So with some of the unknowns, I thought that those two things, we know it's going to be windy in Texas. We know we have bent grass greens. Those are two things that we at least know something about. So 20% onto that to round it up, but it's a pretty simple total model that I've put together.
Yeah, I think mine's rather basic this week too. It just, I don't know what to go off of if there's not a lot of course history or none for that matter. But Texas golf, we got Jordan Spieth, and he's not the overall outright favorite. I don't know what Vegas is doing, because obviously I'm going to ride Jordan Spieth in Texas, especially when putting matters. But let's get right to it. Top fades of the week for you. Anybody that you're low on in comparison to the field or to the other sports books out there?
You know, it's interesting. My model pretty much was spot on with the top seven players. There was minor discrepancies I had between who should have been where.
But yep, same here.
Yeah, I was pretty much looking at, I mean, everything was kind of spot on. The one fade for me that I did find was Sam Burns. He was 34th for me in my model. He's 10th in DK rank. He's 10th in most Vegas books when you look at outright total there. He had three missed cuts in a 39th before his victory at the RBC Heritage. And I just think that 35-1 price and a $9,300 salary on DraftKings is an inflation for what we're looking at for him. I think there's volatility that's going to come into play. But I mean, with that being said, like, it's very minor type of a fade. I mean, it's more of a fade of like, I'm not going to have much of him for like cash games on DraftKings. And I was able to find one head-to-head bet against him that I liked, but he wasn't somebody that I was trying to necessarily target. It just so happened that I found something against him. He was one of my bigger discrepancies, and I went against him on that. But most everything else was pretty spot on, I thought.
I only had really one or two that stuck out. Like one, Keith Mitchell, I guess, like, I don't want to say that's, he's not really a big name, just played really well this past weekend, but he showed up like 30th overall. I think in Vegas, he's on DraftKings overall rank, he's 17th in terms of outright pricing. And then Harris English, he is 42nd for me and 13th in DraftKings outright pricing. So I don't know, like, Harris English didn't play the Valero Open. I know I wanted to kind of see him in that windy atmosphere that Texas golf usually brings to the table. 43rd in the Wells Fargo last week, and then 112th at the RBC Heritage before that. He's just kind of been all over the place since he won in January. I think it was at Century in Hawaii there. I don't know. I'm not really a Harris English guy. My model usually does like him, so it was kind of surprising to see him so low when it's such a basic rating for me this week. But any thoughts on Harris English? I guess really anybody else, like you said, my top 10 is damn near on par with Vegas right now. Just with a little bit more, obviously Jordan Spieth is my number one golfer this week. So a little bit of a discrepancy there, but not my much. I think he's the third or fourth favorite at every book. Harris English. And I guess if you want to talk about Keith Mitchell, recency bias, feel free.
Yeah, let's actually talk a little bit about Keith Mitchell, because it's interesting you brought him up. Because so Burns is my biggest discrepancy in this range. My second biggest discrepancy was Keith Mitchell. And I think for all the reasons you just said, you get the recency bias of what we just saw him do at the Wells Fargo. Yes, he looked good at the Valero. Like, I think that comes into play with a Texas course. But anytime you get a guy like him that there's going to be volatility, and he's 35th in my model, he's 45th from a volatility standpoint on it. So, you know, I think you're going to have a little bit of all over the place. He's very good off the tee. You put him on bent grass greens, I do think it's a big downgrade from what you get on Bermuda from him. But anytime you can get these recency biases on these guys, like, he's not a massive fade bite for me for any reason. But like, when I'm looking in, there are small differences that I, you know, most are small differences. That was the second largest one I could find. So I'm with you on that. I actually like Harris English this week. And English is one that there's two frames of mind with him. So he's 10th overall for me. When I looked for more of a volatiles, like the upside sense of it, he was 8th. He was 18th from a safety perspective, which is kind of what you're trying to avoid if you're, you know, top 40s, head-to-head bets, things like that. But I just think his game is starting to trend in the right direction. You know, he has the miscut at the Heritage, the 21st at the Masters, the 43rd at Wells Fargo, the 42nd at the Match Play, which I guess that's, that's a little bit different of how you come to 42nd in that. But we saw him play really bad there for a couple weeks. It feels like his game's turning around slightly at this point. I think he's a very interesting DK play at like 3 or 4% ownership. We'll get into it a little bit later on when it comes to head-to-head matchups, because as I alluded to earlier, Burns was one of the guys I was going to take on. Harris English is the guy I'm taking him on with. And, you know, it's one of those things where, you know, it's tough because both of those guys kind of have that negative connotation to them when it comes to the safety ratings. So that's always something to worry about. But I just thought Burns was more of a person that I'm going to try to be looking to attack. Like, I mean, Burns went, I don't have it up in front of me right now. I think Burns went from 34th to 57th for safety. So there was a 23 spot difference there. That was one of the biggest movements I had. You know, English has a negative 8 spot movement for me, but I just think it's recency bias with Burns there also. And so I'm going to be picking on him when I can. English was one of the guys I was going to do it with, but I do think you're going to have up and down sort of expectation levels from Harris English. I'm just hoping that the game has somewhat centered itself out at this point.
I think that's fair. I think maybe you talked me into getting exposure to Harris English through DFS and then not betting, because that way I'm somewhat hedged out. But great analysis there. Maybe I got to look at him or look at this model a little bit. But yeah, if he's going to be 1 to 5% owned, I think that's a really good play for a guy that Vegas does certainly like this week. If the public doesn't, then yeah, that's a perfect DFS play, you know, in my opinion, because the pricing on any of his markets really in the betting market are not that lucrative, and I found no edge in any of them. But I love what you said about maybe taking him on against Sam Burns, because obviously Sam Burns is coming off his first win ever. He's a very, very, very volatile golfer, in my opinion. So I like that. Here's some top 40s for you. Let's get right to it. I already mentioned it. Aaron Wise, I'm going to go back to the well. PointsBet did not have any top 40s at the time of our recording here, so I went with plus 125 on FanDuel. DraftKings had minus 106, and then my price was minus 110. So I'm right there with DraftKings, but decent value on FanDuel. The other one here I like a ton is Russell Knox, plus 170 on FanDuel. DraftKings has him at even money. I have him at minus 115. He's just in great form. I think he fits this course perfectly. I think he's coming off an 18th and then a 21st at the Valspar. So just a guy that's kind of sneakily playing good golf. I don't think he has the upside to win it by any means. For a top 40 in this field, it's really only, you know, 5 or 6 star golfers, and the rest are just, you know, good players. We get to finally see Hideki again since the Masters, so that'll be cool. Tom Hogue, plus 150 on DraftKings. I don't love that one as much. I have him priced at plus 110. And FanDuel's got him at plus 145. I just think he fits the course pretty well. What did he finish at? 22nd at the Players, and then he went really low at TPC Scottsdale and the Waste Management Open. I think he opened with a 66 and then laid an egg with a 74. So I think he missed the cut with that 74. But other than that, I think Hogue fits the course pretty well. Another guy for me is Cam Villegas or Villegas. I don't know how to say his last name. Plus 200 on FanDuel. Plus 150 on DraftKings. My price was plus 125. Dude's got 4 top 25s in his last 5 starts. Again, I just think it's a guy in good form who used to be a star golfer on tour. He's still not too old, went through some personal stuff and had some family issues and whatnot. So it's good to see him coming back and playing elite golf. I think he's just going under the radar this week, especially on FanDuel at plus 200. And then my two favorites, I think, here, I'm going to start with my Euro boy, Thomas Peters, plus 135 on FanDuel. I think he's minus 106 on DraftKings, so the same as Aaron Wise there. But this is, you know, it's like European conditions out here in Texas with the wind. I think this is a guy that hits the ball low. He's a decent putter. He's kind of, you know, I guess volatile in that market as well, but he's a top 80 golfer in the world. There's, you know, most of those guys aren't playing this week. So I think he stacks up very well and has a great shot at getting top 40. He's literally just a walking top 20 on the European tour too. So I like Thomas Peters at that price at plus 135. And then my bomb of the week is a guy that just been tearing up TPC courses is KH Lee. He is plus 300 on FanDuel. DraftKings has him at plus 175. I had him at plus 140 to finish top 40. This dude sneakily finished second at the Waste Management Open at TPC Scottsdale. And I think he finished 41st or 40th at a stacked, stacked Players Championship at TPC Sawgrass. I think he went in the water too. So obviously that changes things and changes your outcome very quickly. But KH Lee at 3-1, a guy that just plays really good at TPC properties, I think is a steal, especially when DraftKings has him at plus 175. But that is my top 40 card. I did have Johnny Vegas at plus 155 on FanDuel. Didn't really find a ton of value there, but I'll just put that as honorable mention. But what are your thoughts on Aaron Wise, Russ Knox, Tom Hoge, Cam Vajegas, KH Lee, and Thomas Peters for the top 40 markets?
The only one that didn't show up as a positive value or wasn't all particularly that close would be Russell Knox. You know, the 18th and the 21st that we've seen from him recently, I guess that's the positive. And that's probably where my model doesn't pick up on a two tournament standpoint as fast as yours would with it. You know, he's a good win player. You would think that he's going to be able to bring that over to an event like this, but man, he is so up and down that I just can't seem to get on this guy correctly. I was fading him last week. He comes in 18th place. You know, I kind of lean towards wanting to fade him again this week. He's outside the top 60 in all ways I ran my model. You know, if we look before the 18th and the 21st, we had a miscut, 67th, 70th. So it's like, not like the results have necessarily been there. I mean, maybe he's found something since the Valspar and he's turned it around. That would be my concern with him. As far as your honorable mention with Vegas, I only have one top 40 put in right now, which would be Tyler McCumber at plus 490. I went with a super long shot on it, but Vegas and Peters were the two guys that I was going to take a deeper dive into before punching a ticket on it. I think Peters is one of the better values in my system. He's seventh for me in my model. I mean, he's pretty much, as you said, he's a top 40 machine. He's a top 20 machine in Europe. So, you know, he's a guy that I'm trying to find a way to get exposure onto. I have an outright ticket on him currently. I'm trying to find a different way to get onto him too. I haven't necessarily found one yet. Maybe the top 40 market, because the math does make sense there. It always worries me when I go down to that low plus range on some of those plays, because I just have not been having success with those. But Peters was one of the better values I had with it. And then Vegas was one of the better values I had with it. I mean, Vegas's game seems to be turning around too lately. Like the 43rd at the Wells Fargo and the 48th at the Valspar, like sure, that doesn't quite lock into that top 40 range. But I mean, really, if you just ignore the miscut at the Valero, which unfortunately is a Texas course, like he's been good here for the last 10 to 12 weeks. So he was on my short list there. And then you mentioned Vajegas. He was actually the biggest mover in my model when I looked for a guy that should be a top 40 cut maker. So when I ran it from an overall sense, he was only 75th for me. And so that takes a lot of that, you know, the lack of upside. You know, I don't think he's going to win the tournament type of thing with it. But when I just looked at him from what he was as a golfer, he went all the way up to 33rd for me, which I usually don't get 40 or 42 spot type movements on a lot of these players. So his form looks really good right now. The 11th at the Valspar, 25th at the Heritage, 17th at the Valero, which, you know, we keep mentioning is a Texas course there where you're going to have wind to come into play. Honda is an eighth. I mean, that Florida courses are always windy. So I think it's a good setup for him. And then, yeah, I have very slight value on Wise, Hoagie, and KH Lee is at the number you got him at would be pretty much my break even number. I believe you said he was plus 300.
Yep. 300 flat on FanDuel.
Yeah. That's essentially where I have him. I have 290 being proper. So, I mean, it's pretty much a break even number for me on it, but you know, he's another guy that when I'm trying to look for safety, he jumps up in my model. And that's the one difference I've made this week when trying to handicap these top 40 markets, because my preference was always to play them as top 10s and 20s when I could. And I would do those where I got ties paid out in full. You know, we talk a lot of these legal sports books that are these top 40 markets to where you don't necessarily have that, but they're paying a little bit deeper as far as you get, you know, top 40 instead of 20 on it. So one of the things I used to do is I would take a lot of that upside into account. So, you know, you'd be getting guys at 5-6 to 1 And when they miss the cut, it's like, all right, well, you can live with that. And then when they come in the top 20 and you get that upside finish from them, that pace, it's, you know, for the week a lot of these times. And it doesn't work as well in this top 40 market, I've realized. I've had to try to be a little bit more cautious and conservative. So, you know, pretty much every guy you named, I believe, other than Knox, jumped up in terms of safety. So, you know, you have to love that from a top 40 sense with it.
Yeah. Russell Knox is all, I feel like my model likes him every single week. I feel like I've recommended him in a top 40 market every single time he's hit the field that we've talked about. But all right, so Johnny Vegas, you're on. I will make that a play. I scratched him off, but I did make him honorable mention because I like when you talk me into him. And then, yeah, you mentioned it. I'll go right into outrights here. Actually, no, we got to get your top 40s. But Thomas Peters, I do have a 100-to-1 ticket. I believe it's PointsBet that offers that. 80-to-1. I'm sorry. Ricky Fowler is 100-to-1, and I will just spoiler alert. I'm going to take that just because, I don't know, he's starting to play a little bit better. He sucked last week. I don't know. I got a good feeling about Ricky coming up this week. I should just take him top 40. I think he's going to be safe. I think the putter is starting to come back a little bit, but getting ahead of myself, top 40s for you. Is there anybody else that you didn't just mention?
No, I mean, I mentioned him, but Tyler McCumber would be the only one at plus 490 on FanDuel. He's plus 300 on DraftKings. He's 43rd in this field for strokes gained in the wind. He's top 25 in par 5 birdie or better percentage, 28th for me in my two-year model from distance and proximity over 175 yards. And, you know, he had his horrible result last week at the Wells Fargo, which, sure, I mean, that's a little bit concerning. Like, I don't love when guys come in with negative form, but I just think that this has caused an inflation in price here, and I'm willing to bite at a course that seems to be ideally suited for his game. So 490 is a big number. He's actually as high as 31st in my model overall. So, you know, I tweaked it a little bit to, I don't have him quite that high when it comes to a top 40 market with the way I do my math for it, but I thought he should have been more in like the plus 225 range. So, I mean, I have almost, you know, I have like 265 points of difference on him. So I'm willing to ignore what he's done in his last result and kind of just try to move forward with what I have from a longer term sample size with him.
No, absolutely. I know he started on fire at the Genesis. I think he finished top 25 at the Players too. So at plus 490 for a guy with that potential upside, and if he grades that well in the win for you, I think that's a really good ticket. I like that, especially anybody top 40 at damn near 5-to-1 odds. Pretty much the same, the Bramlett factor from last weekend. I just took it because of the price, and I like Joseph Bramlett, but he let us down, but only by like a stroke or two. So whatever, I like that McCumber ticket. Let's get into some outrights and we'll get out of here. It'll be a quick show. I'm just more excited for the PGA Championship coming up in 2 weeks, as I'm sure everybody listening is. But my outright card is, let's see here. I got five people. So I got Thomas Peters at 80-to-1 on PointsBet. Brooks Koepka, 23-to-1 on DraftKings. I don't love it, but it was just the best price on Brooks. And I think he graded out fourth for me overall. I think in Vegas, he's like ninth or 10th. So I found a little bit of edge there. Jordan Spieth, I'm always going to play him to win in Texas. He won the Valero Open. I think we had the outright there as well. And then Daniel Berger at 17-to-1 on DraftKings. Jordan Spieth is 11-to-1 on DraftKings. I think that's the best price in the legal sportsbook market right now. And then Ricky Fowler, 100-to-1 on PointsBet. I'm just going to shoot from the hip and see if Ricky could. You know, if there's any field that he should play very well, and I think it's this week. But I'm also just, I didn't know what to do with Hideki. I feel like I just didn't get any good edge number there with him. He's like 20-to-1 across the market. I would like him more in that 30 range. But any thoughts on Peters to win? I think you already have that ticket. Koepka, Spieth, Berger, and Fowler.
Well, Fowler, you know, he won at TPC Scottsdale. So, you know, maybe there's good, if we're looking at TPC courses, we maybe can find
some. He does great in TPC, doesn't he, historically?
Yeah.
I guess the old Ricky Fowler does, though. But now that he's engaged or married, he's maybe that's what ruined his golf game. So if you're thinking about getting married, I guess I'm getting married this year, too. And that could be the end of my golf game. Follow, just going off the trend here of Ricky Fowler. So if you guys are playing your best golf, maybe hold off on the wedding and, wait until your game goes south and then do it.
Yeah, I mean, maybe that's what Fowler's problem's been. But I agree with you. He does seem to be turning it around marginally here lately. He's good off the tee. He's 26 for me over a two-year sample size. We know he's good around the green. If the putter can heat up, like that will be – I mean, his putting has been so bad recently that he's 107th over his last 24 rounds. If that turns around, there's always hope there. And then he's a great wind player that does well on bent grass. So that's kind of like the corollary you're looking for that to turn around. I gave him a very deep dive at 100-1. I have not punched a ticket yet. I am considering doing so with it. I have
just look at it with Ricky. Sorry to cut off there. Like, he's never going to get priced better than 100-1. So if you're looking to hit him live, like, that's not the guy to do it. I think if anything, for like Berger, if you don't find value in Berger at 17-1, maybe he starts a little slow and we get like a 25 or 30-1 live price. But for Fowler, I think he's either going to be eliminated really quickly or he's going to be in contention and that price is going to jump down to like 30 or 40-1. So we're getting essentially a projected like 60 points of value at 100-1 right now. So that's kind of how I looked at it. And just I'm okay with that.
Well, and that's what you're looking for. I mean, that's where you, like, you're 100% correct with that. Like, you're trying to find guys that are going to be up and down, but when they're out, they're out, and that's fine. You lose an outright ticket on it. Like, when they're on, all of a sudden that guy goes from 100-1 and, you know, he's fourth place entering day two. All of a sudden the guy's a 25-30-1 golfer, you know, at that stage of the tournament. And as you said, you're getting, you know, 65-70-75 points of value in given spots with that. So yeah, you're never going to find a number lower than 100-1. I mean, I think that I'm kind of surprised they even placed him that low to begin with that. He's on my short list. Berger is somebody that does have marginal value. I didn't start a card that low, but I always think Berger's price is a little bit off. Spieth in Texas, as you mentioned, like, Spieth for me, depending on how I ran the model, like, there were ways where he was the second best golfer for me. He was a slight negative value just at the price tag that we're looking at. I mean, I have him more in like the 14-15-1 range, which I guess 2-3 points up at that number becomes a lot. But yeah, I have three outrights right now that I've currently punched. Two of them were the ones you mentioned. I have Peters at 75-1. I didn't get as good of a number as you did. But I did get a better number on Koepka when that first dropped. I got him at 26-1. So those were the two I have in. The third one I put in was Cameron Champ at 110-1. I mean, if we're looking for guys that can bomb the ball off the tee, Champ is probably the second best in this field other than Bryson. I worry about his play in bunkers. I mean, he's arguably the worst player in bunkers and maybe on the tour. Like, his short game is just atrocious, but you have really big greens. He's a good long iron player. He has a skill set that if this plays like a birdie fest, he may be able to get himself out of trouble. That number, unfortunately, this is the problem with these tournaments. And I want to say DraftKings still maybe has an 80 or 90-1 number on him. But this is the problem with these tournaments. When a guy like Dustin pulls out of it, you see these massive movements, and they're always overboard of what they should be. Like, the number that they're releasing on 99% of the players, even with Dustin in the field, is always overvalued to begin with. And then you get Dustin out, and then they move all his win equity spread across the whole field, and everybody gets substantially worse in pricing with it. So, you know, it's unfortunate that a lot of these guys, they were already bad values and they became worse values. I still like Champ at the number that he was at. You know, if you want to go maybe a little different route with it, he's 80-1 for a first round leader. I actually, that was one of the markets that I punched a ticket on six people this week. Wyndham Clark, 100-1. He was the biggest mover I had when I was looking for first round leader potential. Anirban Lahiri, 150-1. That's a shot in the dark. Carlos Ortiz, 66-1. Sebastian Munoz, 100-1. Danny Lee, 125-1. And then the Champ ticket I mentioned at 80-1. A lot of my exposure, I mean, I don't want to express that like a lot of my exposure, but a lot of my like outright exposure is there. I don't have, those are very small tickets, but I only have three outrights right now. I only had 14 players in general from their opening numbers show up as a positive value. A lot of those guys became negative values once the market moved on them. And then there were certain guys like, you know, like a Wyndham Clark, for example, Sebastian Munoz, that I just decided to play as a first round leader rather than an outright winner. I just thought that was a more conducive path to try to get, you know, long-term equity back from it. But yeah, I don't know. I think it's a tournament where there's not that much value once Dustin pulled out of it. Like, if I was to throw out a couple names I did like Palmer at 50-1, that's a guy that my model always loves. Sergio, Harris English, Taylor Gooch, Eric Van Rooyen, and then I mean, I guess that's pretty much it. Danny Lee, if you want to get really deep with that, but same thing with Lee, I'd rather just play him as a first round leader.
Okay. Yeah. Man, Harris English, I don't know if I can get myself to a win ticket on him. I think I'm just going to do the DFS thing. But Cam Champ, do you think he's going to be popular in DFS? I guess we got a couple extra minutes. We can getting to DFS a little bit, but I do love what you said about Cam Champ. This fits him very well. He's 8K on DraftKings. I feel like that's a little like high compared to what the field thinks of Cam Champ, but he is coming off of two top 40s. One was at Valero, and then the Masters, he was very, very well. I think he finished 25th or 26th. So I do like the call on Cam Champ. And if he hung around the field, around the green at Augusta, I don't think like this course should do like much to him at all. I think if anything, like you said, if it becomes a birdie fest, he could just overpower it and save a lot of trouble, like you said. So I think Cam Champ, yeah, he's now 85-1 on DraftKings. You find any value there? Because you kind of just talked me into it, but I'm usually not one to kind of chase somebody else's ticket. Like, you clearly got the best price in the market on Cam Champ, but it's not there anymore. But I'm kind of interested in doing that after you talked about him. And I don't know, Vegas is kind of high on him now.
If you give me 1 second, I can tell you what the proper price I have on him is.
I will give you plenty of seconds. I'm seeing if there's anybody else. I guess shout out to Antoine Rosner. I think he could finish top 40 as well this week. He is going to be priced very high. And that's it.
Hopefully. Yeah, no, I agree with you on Rosner too. That was a guy that I was doing a second look at in the top 40 market. But as far as Champ is concerned, 80-1 is the proper price I have on him. And it's exactly 80-1 would be the proper price. So, I mean, we're talking very, very, very small, between 80 to 85. Like, I mean, there's a little bit of value there. I think a lot of that value has been sucked out of the number. But, you know, there's a lot of books I've seen where I wouldn't be playing him at these books. Like, I've seen him as low as like 50-55-1 at some places.
Yeah, I think FanDuel's got him at 55-1. So, like, there's a clear discrepancy there. I think maybe first round leader is the way to go, depending his tee time and what the wind is there. There is always some sort of edge based on morning tee times or afternoon tee times. So check the weather if you're interested in that type of market. Last guy I just randomly want to talk to you about. If I just grade straight TPC courses, James Hahn comes up pretty high if I take away current form. So just TPC history. Any thoughts on James Hahn? He's been just dreadful lately. I don't think he's finished top 40 since the Genesis, but any thoughts on him? So back in February, I think.
Yeah, I mean, if I remove all his recent stuff, he jumps pretty heavily for me also. I mean, I don't have him as a value even when I do that, but he becomes, well, if I put him where I have him, what number are you seeing for him on an outright ticket?
Oh, I wouldn't bet him outright. I was just overall top 40. Well, I don't think James, I mean, he finished 10th at Scottsdale?
Well, if I put him, like, he finished, I don't have it that far back in front of me.
I want to say 10th because I had him a top 20 ticket. But
well, if I put him to where I have him from, like if I get rid of some of the recent stuff with it, he's a very small value on DraftKings. He's a negative value in the betting market. And then what is his top 40 number?
Plus 150 on DraftKings.
I have him at like plus 130 being proper. So he's a very small, I guess 20 points is a lot there, but
plus 200 on FanDuel, so maybe that's a ticket worth.
Oh, that's I like that. Yeah, that's a good number there on that. Like, I think the problem is that's one of those guys where it's like you're dealing with the volatility of him. So, like, I tend to veer away from those as top 40 bets. But if I get rid of like the problems that he's had recently, which is in fairness what you should be trying to do, like that's why I run things out as long as I do. I'm trying to get rid of any of like the preconceived like biases of like short-term form on players. So Hahn's one of those guys, if you remove what what scares me is he withdrew from the Honda, which I don't recall why he withdrew from there. And then it's been miscut, and he didn't play for a month before that. So who knows if he still has a lingering effect going on from whatever the issue was there. When we look before that, yeah, his play was really good. I guess that would be my concern, that maybe just something hasn't clicked yet, but that's what we're trying to find more or less in these markets, are just guys that we're higher on than the industry. And a lot of the times when you build your own number out, and if you're doing it from, you know, a different time frame than the casinos are, or, you know, even DraftKings, which, I mean, they're copying what Vegas is doing in a lot of ways with it, but you can find some values like that. It just, you know, for a top 40, it does scare me. He's, from a safety perspective, he's 31 spots off for me. Like, he gets 31 spots worse for safety, which I guess makes sense. His current form looks horrible right now. But yeah, his, like, if we're just looking at pure top 40, pure upside, pure of what they can do, he's a value on a top 40 ticket, and he's a value on DraftKings, which I guess, like, I mean, if you're looking for a GPP contest, like, maybe he makes some sense for there. Like, I would keep him far away from my cash game lineups. But but yeah, like from a GPP perspective, he does kind of check a lot of boxes.
All right, go low, James Hahn. Any matchups that you are picking on other than Sam Burns with Harris English?
So I have one honorable mention that I have not put in yet, and I almost didn't want to go back to this after last week because I mentioned Grayson Murray last week on the show as a top 40, and I'm not sure if I'm actually going to punch a ticket because there are a couple problems that I have just with the way my model's set up, which I'll get to in a second. But Grayson Murray plus 197 over Bo Hoag. Hoag has missed six straight cuts. Murray's missed three of four. And my model has these two dead even in odds. So, I mean, like, it's like pretty much plus 100 both ways. I think Hoag was like minus 101 was the fair price, and Murray was plus 101 with it. The issue, though, is that my model stunts the floor for a golfer. So, like, for example, it reads all missed cuts as being equal, which isn't the case. And we keep seeing Murray come in dead last place. So there's something to be said about that. Like, Murray's not just missing cuts. He's missing them in like glorious fashion. He's missing them. Like, he's legitimately like 14 shots over every single tournament. So, you know, I might play it for a little bit smaller. I haven't decided yet. I mean, my math is just so off on that one. And when we look at Hoag, like six straight missed cuts isn't good, but he's not missing them in the same fashion that Murray is. That one showed his value. And the only other one that showed his value was Anirban Lahiri minus 119 over Kramer Hickok. But it's the same problem I had, like, I guess with any of the plays. Like, Lahiri all of a sudden becomes a problem when I'm just looking for a safety perspective. And I think there's a lot of miscut potential to him. And I'm not so sure that I want to deal with him shooting an 80 on Thursday or Friday, misses the cut, and Hickok finds a way to get through and then, you know, shoots back-to-back 80s on the week and comes in 70th place. But it's like he wins the ticket. So the only one I have punched right now would be English over Burns. We'll see if I get to Murray over Hoag, but I didn't find much. This was about the least amount of plays I've ever found before, and I'm probably just going to attack this from an in-tournament standpoint. Those continue to be where, like, my in-tournament plays.
Yeah, you crush in-tournament, man. That's
yeah, 100%. I'm just going to probably have a lot of my exposure there this week. As I said, just three outrights. There's going to be my five or six first-round leaders. And then the Tyler McCumber top 40. That's about it for me. It's going to be a small week. It's not because the PGA Championship's next week. It just so happened Dustin pulled out, made the board worse for outrights, and I thought the board was pretty spot on to begin with.
If anything, you're teaching a great lesson. Like, just because it's a golf tournament, and we obviously, if you're listening to this, you love to bet golf, but does not mean you need a full card every single week. So I think that's a lesson that you didn't necessarily try to portray, but I think it's a great lesson for people out there. Just, you know, obviously stay controlled and wait for a tournament and wait for your model to really click. But I love it. Thanks for your time again. Good luck this week. Spencer, where can everybody find you on Twitter, man?
Everybody can find me on Twitter at TeeOffSports. And I just to reiterate what you said, I think that's a great point with that. Like, you don't have to bet every single play that's given to you. You have many books with many plays and you get to handpick it. And that's where your edge comes from. If you had to make every bet that the casino put out, you would lose money. You wouldn't be able to find an edge. The edge is found by being selective and trying to, you know, jump in when you have a bigger edge where you think a casino's made a mistake. So I think that's a good point that you made there. And, you know, just always pick your spots. It's very important to find value.
That's right. And try to find another podcast in the world that just goes into a matchup about Lahiri and Hickok, because I will put that price at plus 2,000 that you cannot. But if so, then I'm not going to pay that ticket out, because that's a, you know, just shoot from the hip here. But thanks a lot. I appreciate it. It's a fun show. I'm looking forward to the PGA Championship. And yeah, good luck again, Spencer. I appreciate it, man.
Thanks. You too, man.